Hi, this is David Sweet, founder of Focus Core, and I'd like to invite you to take a look at our 2024 salary guide. It's a great resource for hiring APAC professionals wanting to know about the salaries for executive positions within Japan, as well as finding out information of what's important to attract the best talent in Japan. The salary guide is found on our website under About Salary Guide 2024. I hope you find this information useful for you and your company. Now, on to our podcast. Until it gets really cold and you're frostbitten.
I have icicles hanging from my nose.
Today, I'm joined by Corey McGowan, who's a coach, husband, father, and a bear dancer. After decades of searching, he found his true home in the mountains of Japan, and he's now answering the call to do powerful work in the service to the civilizational transformation that wants to emerge in these complex times. Corey's a professionally trained transformational coach and an experienced adventurer. He's using both of these to support leaders and other people around the world to express their fullest potential and co-create the lives they want to lead for themselves. He also is very active in supporting his town of Minakami and creating a vision for community development with the hopes of being a leader in solving the problem of rural depopulation in Japan. Today, we'll discuss with Corey how he got to where he's at, his path of moving from the corporate world into doing his running his own successful executive coaching business. We'll talk about the difference between training and coaching. And we'll talk about community development and what he's doing up in Minakami, and some routines and resources that have helped Corey. I think you'll find that this is a energized and wonderful interview with Corey. He's in the mountains, sitting outside, and we'll try to post a link to some video. The sound sometimes fades out because Corey is sitting outside and occasionally throwing snowballs for his dog to chase while we are in conversation. So you'll hear that he is a true adventurer as well as a wonderful person to know. So without further ado, I bring you Corey McGowan. Good day. I'm here with Corey McGowan. Corey, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, great to see you, David. Thanks for inviting me and for being with me today.
So before we get started, for those of us who are listening to us, please describe your surroundings because it's magnificent.
Yeah. So I'm, first of all, fortunate enough to be sitting kind of in my front yard. and you may hear my dog barking in the background who wants me to throw a snowball for him. But yeah, we're surrounded by a lot of white. We had our second good snow of the season, and it's been real cold, so the snow has that kind of crystalline texture to it, shining in the morning sun. And about 30 or 40 meters away down below is the Tonegawa River, and that's looking pretty nice as well with some snow on the rocks. And it's low this time of year because they don't release the dams. But yeah, I've got the river and some trees and yeah, it's real nice surroundings.
Up in Winterland, Minakami. Yep. So obviously we know each other well and have done coaching courses together, and now you do coaching for me and my team. But before we get started, can you summarize your background and how you came to be living in Minakami and becoming an executive coach?
Sure. So I have been in Japan since 1999, basically the whole time. I had one quick trip to the US. And so all of my professional life has also been in Japan. I started off the way a lot of foreigners do here. I've done English teaching. I got into some recruiting as well, but then my path kind of went in a little bit of a different direction when I started working at an educational theme park called an edutainment theme park called Kidzania, which was a franchise out of Mexico, but the first one outside of Mexico was in Tokyo. And so I came on there doing some English training initially, but then got to build my own programs and create new products in the park where kids came and used English. And that went really well. I was there for about 7 years and got to go to the director level. So I was the first foreigner as a director within that company. And that kind of showed me a lot about business. And also showed me a lot about, what's the kindest way to say this? Hold on, I'm going to throw a snowball. He's never going to stop barking. management practices that were questionable and at times downright verbally violent, and just made me think, like, why does this happen? You know, why do people manage in this way? And so I started to learn a bit more about management, and particularly organizational development, which is actually what my dad did in his career. And I didn't really know anything about until I just started studying it myself. And then from there was fortunate enough to actually get an organizational development role at Tokyo American Club. And that was great because I got to do a lot more work in English. My work in Kidzania had primarily been in Japanese, except for the English programs I was creating. All the staff I was working with and the directors, it was all in Japanese. Working in an English-speaking environment in a really multicultural environment, this really cool membership from lots of different industries. And I got into organizational development there, leadership development, training the management teams, doing strategic programs, and came across coaching kind of by chance. I was looking into the possibility of getting a master's in organizational development, and the coaching program, frankly, was just a heck of a lot cheaper. So I decided to give that a try. And it was delivered by someone we both know, a Kiwi guy here who had been in Japan a long time. And it was a really good program. Like the first time, I remember very clearly one of the first trainings that we had and doing some coaching practice, just feeling like, wow, this makes a lot of sense to me. Very quickly, it really resonated with me in a lot of ways. And so from there, I got my certification and started coaching internally at Tokyo American Club. I was coaching some of the management team and the directors there. I was also coaching some heads of NPOs in Tokyo as pro bono work. So I started to cut my teeth a bit in that way. Then I moved out here, and that had to do with a friend that I had met and starting to use his house out here, and then realizing, wow, I could actually live here and do the commute. And my manager at Tokyo American Club at the time supported that. So I commuted for the first year. And then found a job out here as a COO of an outdoor and adventure company called Canyons. And that was, for me, like, wow, kind of dream job, higher level management, overseeing lots of different operations, working in the outdoors, which I've loved for a long time. And with the onset of COVID and due to several other factors, that kind of fell apart spectacularly after a year. A little bit less than a year. And that was really rough. Like it it really messed with my confidence in a lot of ways. And it just knocked me on my ass a bit. And then through actually hiring my own coach for the first time, I started to do a lot of my own work and kind of figure out what it was that I really wanted. And that helped me to figure out that coaching is something that I really wanted to do, and I wanted to do it on my own. And I could incorporate all the stuff that I love with outdoors and Minakami and kind of promoting this area. And so in November of 2020, I launched Adventure Partner my company, just me and my coaching practice. And that's what I've been doing for the past year or so.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's quite a path. we've shared some commonalities moving from HR and organizational development and then into coaching. And I think we both feel the why coaching is so much more significant than perhaps just a one-day training program. Let's dive in that rabbit hole for a little bit, just for fun. What's for you, what's the difference between, you know, define, because there's a lot of talk about executive coaching nowadays, right? How do you define the difference between that versus a training program and maybe facilitation? And then on second after that, for someone considering bringing someone in, what's the difference? Why would I go with one and not the other?
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I love that question. And it's a bit complex, right? So I would say kind of the first thing is anytime that companies are making an investment in their employees' development is a good thing, right? So that's just like the overarching thing, because it's shocking to me at times. And, you know, I've as I said, I've only worked professionally in Japan, so I can't speak to other countries really. But it's shocking to me just how little companies do invest, considering just how much evidence there is out there, what a difference it makes to invest it in your employees. So so training really has its place, and I've done quite a bit of that myself. But the way that it's often executed doesn't take much consideration into who are the different people in the room, what are their needs, what do they care about, why are they there. So it can, I would say, kind of the one of the biggest drawbacks to it is that it can have a very minimal lasting effect. You know, it can change things on the short term, unless it's a very specific, like you have to learn this type of skill that you're going to be doing, you're going to be using every day, then that's really good application of training that will have more of a long lasting effect. But so much falls under the umbrella of training, and it's such a, it can become a bit of a box checking exercise. Well, we're doing training, so therefore we must be developing our employees, therefore we must be, you know, a good place to work and all that. But if it's lacking kind of meaning and real application for the employees, then it's not as effective or as helpful as it could be.
Yeah, there's not a lot of, I mean, to have a proper learning development plan in place, for example, especially if it's individualized. Yeah. I mean, a lot of times companies just, some companies have the sophistication to put something in place, whether it's for a position.
Yeah.
But to get it down to an individualized level, it's rare globally. Yeah. And I know in the U.S., when I was working in the U.S. doing organizational development, we would do it for position only. But most organizations just do it hodgepodge. They're throwing mud against the wall, hoping it sticks. And it's just not any thought around that. So if I'm a manager or an HR director and I'm thinking, okay, we need to do some development, and they're listening to this, would I choose? I mean, obviously we got a couple of proponents to coaching, so we're going to probably fall on that side of the fence, I'm guessing. But why would we let's put it on the there that hard skills, probably doing a training session for hard skills, very beneficial.
Yeah.
Something repetitive that you need, right?
Yeah.
Why an executive coach?
Yeah. Well, you know, just to relate this back to the training question, and again, this has just been my experience of it, but so much of what's happening around, like what we're talking about here is development, right? And I don't know, I guess I haven't really thought about a definition of that, but, you know, development is just like getting your people to move to kind of a next level of, I don't want to only use the word performance, but that's often what we're talking about, right? Is how can people do what they need to do better in an ideally in a way that's better for them and better for the company or the organization, right? So often what's happening with discussions around development is it's a group of leaders in a room talking about how shall we develop our people? And it's so rarely turned back on them, right? Like, well, what are we doing for our own development? Like, oh, maybe we'll set strategy, or maybe we'll talk about tactics or do these things that sound cool, but who are we as a leadership team and how should that change before we think about what's happening with our management team? It's the less comfortable, more vulnerable conversation, right? And that's where executive coaching really comes in, because executive coaching can be, or it is, so individualized. It so does take in the consideration of each leader. And it can be a really vulnerable process because it's done one-on-one. It's all confidential. And while the company can say, this is why we would like this executive coaching, in my opinion, the most effective way that coaching is done is that the person being coached, the client, will set the agenda. So with the leaders that I work with, it's really not uncommon, in fact, quite common, for the conversations that we're having in our executive coaching conversations to sound from an outsider like they're completely unrelated to work, like discussions about spouses and families and personal habits and these types of things. They're like, how is this executive coaching? But that's what people need. You know, it's what I love about coaching is it's meeting people where they're really at, not where, you know, the business plan says they should be at, or their career plan, or any of that. It's like, where are they really at so they can be with what is before they can move into what it is that they would want to create, and hopefully as part of the organization.
Yeah. I've enjoyed, when doing coaching with people, going in, and where you enter is where a person's mind is at right away. Right.
Yeah.
But what I also appreciate with executive coaching is that there's an overarching theme that a coach is able to bring it back to, similar to a sports coach, right? I mean, if I'm going out running, it's all about running. Now I might be working on, you know, intervals or speed work, but it's all still around, you know, how am I going to work on that marathon and that end goal? So even though they're coming in today and they're talking about decision making and how that's going to work for their boss conversation that they're going to have this afternoon, there's still that overarching, how does that fit in? Mm-hmm. And I always appreciate that. Well, one of the concerns that I know that I had going into coach and being an executive, being a manager of people going into coaching, one of the things that I hear is, well, I don't want to give coaching because it's just going to get my employees to leave. or I've heard people say, well, I just want to coach someone so that they can leave. You know, just seems a bit, talk a little bit around that.
Well, I've been coaching people on your team for a year now, and no one's left yet. so far we've avoided that. But let's see. It occurs to me that there's quite a bit of faith in that the coaching will work. And part of that faith is that if someone gets coached and they leave, that's actually the better thing for the company. And what the coaching allowed is for that to come out. Because otherwise, if you hadn't coached that person, you would have had someone on your team that actually didn't want to be there, which is not, that can be quite expensive for the company as well, right?
Yeah.
So yes, that could certainly be an outcome. But I would say the opposite is also true, that if you're investing in coaching for your people, particularly people who are not kind of at the director, VP, top level of your company, it's a pretty impressive investment to be making in your people, right? particularly, you know, in Japan still, it's a, you know, coaching is not as developed as it is in maybe the US or Europe. And so it's significant to be investing in that way. And I think most people realize like, wow, the company believes in me enough to be investing in a coach for me. Now that's a different conversation than remedial coaching, right? Where we need to coach you to fix you. And that's a kind of a different conversation. But yeah, I mean, again, this is just kind of my opinion and my approach to coaching, but if you're going to have someone be in a coaching relationship, you really have to be willing to have any outcome happen. And so it's faith in the process. It's faith in that leader that you're having to be coached. But that's, for me, that's kind of a true understanding of what coaching. If you have a particular outcome for what the coaching is, then you're thinking that the person is going to be working with an advisor or a mentor or perhaps a trainer.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good summarization of difference between part of elements of coaching and training is that, you know, you have a specific outcome in mind that you're going to guide those people to. Yeah.
I mean, even the person in the coaching partnership, the client in the coaching partnership can think that they have a particular outcome set up for the coaching, and it often will be different than that. Hmm. And for me, that's a testament to the way that the coach works with the client is to trust the client enough to really go where they need to go, even if it's different than what they thought it was going to be initially. So I think just that openness to any outcome, and believing also that any outcome is the right outcome for the leader and ultimately for the organization.
That's great. I like that. Let's switch gears for a sec. Let's move to career. Right? So you went from corporate HR.
Yep.
Kidzania and American Club, and then you jumped into your own gig.
Yep.
Let's talk about that. Because that's jumping in. I'm sure a lot of the listeners, you know, are thinking about starting up their own company, or you know, talk around that process.
Sure. So I'm not someone, I would never classify myself as an entrepreneur, actually. And I'm not one of those people that thought, oh, someday I'm going to start my own thing. So it was really kind of out of the blue for me. I support a family of four, and I am, I'm in a lot of ways kind of mid to later part of my career. So it was not a predictable outcome for me. And it was actually kind of thanks to COVID and some of the trauma that came with how I lost my last job that allowed all this to happen. And not to mention an incredibly trusting wife who kind of was willing to take this leap with me after many conversations. Now, also, you know, I have been in my career for, you know, 15, 20 years already. My wife had been working for a lot of that. So we were also in a financial situation where it wasn't, you know, wasn't a matter of not getting food on the table, at least, you know, for a year or two. So we had a bit of runway. So, man, if you can have runway, that's awesome. So particularly if you're supporting a family. So there's that part of it. And then there's just this the journey of like, can I really do this? You know, can I really make this happen? And I think one of the biggest lessons for me so far has been like, the people that you know will, and that you've, you know, had relationships with over the years will kind of rise to a level of support that might surprise you, you know. And that's been in particular, my experience with you is just like, wow, people show up in ways because they believe that you can do something. And so in some ways, I would say part of it is actually just being willing to take that first step of putting it out into the world and saying, hey, I want to do this thing. Because if you don't do that, definitely nothing's going going to happen. Yeah. And it's kind of similar to what I was talking about with the coaching, is also be prepared for any outcome, you know?
Yep.
Like, you may think it's going to go a certain way. It may also go a very different way than that. And that's certainly been my experience so far. I mean, I didn't have a super clear image of what I thought the company and the practice would be at the beginning. But it's definitely different than what I imagined it can be. And in mostly wonderful ways.
That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I would say, having started three companies, I know that it definitely goes different directions and you never know what the outcome is. And sometimes one of the other things I found was going out of business and being bankrupt isn't the end of the world. Mm-hmm. You just start over.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, I would always encourage someone, if they have that inkling, you jump and the net will appear.
Yeah.
But I would also say, yeah, have a runway. I kept my day job for a long time while I did what now they call the side hustle, which is a good way of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, just speaking specifically of coaching, I'd love to add that, you know, one of my teachers, Adam Quiney, really is firm about, if you want to get into coaching on your own, if that's going to be your career, then just how critical it is to make sure you have an income that is probably separate to the coaching initially, because otherwise there's just no way you're not going to bring into the coaching conversation the fact that you need to hire that, or you need that client to hire you, you know? So, I think that's really wise advice. And so that's probably true for other service-based businesses as well. You don't want to bring in kind of a desperation into the conversation. So if you can have some other funding, maybe it's not a job, maybe it's a loan, you know. And in Japan, we don't have equity on our homes, but if you're in another country, something like that. Give yourself some runway so you can step into these conversations with people in a really genuine way. Yeah. That's specific to coaching, but
I applaud that. I think that's so important. Being in recruitment as well, it's anytime. I mean, that's why I like coaching too. It's individualized and and it's working with people to help guide them. And if you're desperate for money and you're doing it for money, then the conversation gets a bit slanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where challenges arise. Now, I don't get me wrong, I think services all should get compensated appropriately.
Yeah.
But that's a side issue. I think the whole starting up gig is, you do it for love and you find that center first from that.
Yeah.
But you did another big jump though, and besides going into your own gig, is taking a big jump from going to the city, from being a city mouse to a country mouse.
Yeah.
And I, one of the things that you've wanted to share was about community development in Minokami.
Yeah.
And you know, you're with your backdrop there, that is not a background. that's
the real thing.
It's not a Zoom background there. You've got the real thing, but you look like you're in a painting, right? It's so elegant. Mm-hmm. Talk about community development in Minokami.
Yeah. So people living in Japan maybe most likely are familiar with this, but Japan has a real social issue of rural depopulation, has for a while. And so coming up with kind of plans for rural revitalization is something that interests me a lot. So I've lived almost half my life in Japan now. I will probably live the rest of my life here, and wanting to be somehow a contributing, if not citizen, at least resident here, is really important to me. And the opportunity to move to Minokami was partly just about me being an outdoors person and growing up in a rural area and wanting to come back to that. But it was also really about my two sons, understanding kind of what community is, you know, and getting a sense of that was different than than Tokyo. And it's not to say we didn't have community in Tokyo, but it's different than living in a local community. So I wanted them to see that. And Minakami has this really interesting mix of a place that has had foreigners here for more than 40 years because of the outdoor scene. So it was very easy to assimilate into as a half foreign, half Japanese family. And wanting to, thinking more and more about like, how do I make this a place that my sons and their kids would want to, if not live in forever, come back to? You know, how do we make it a place for them? And possibly even further, you know, the, there's the Native American thinking of thinking about seven generations out. So kind of similar to that idea of like, how do we make this a place for our kids and their kids' generations? And kind of a best outcome for me is that if Minakami could do that in a way that becomes a model for other rural communities. And Minakami does really well with it. I mean, they have, I don't know how kind of the funding works for this stuff, but within Gunma, which is the prefecture that we're in, they have quite a bit of funding to support that type of thing. And one of the things that I do here is what's called a relocation concierge. So this, I believe this started even before COVID, but it's definitely ramped up with COVID, is that more and more people are considering an alternative lifestyle like this and have the opportunity to do that because of the, you know, growing remote work scene. And so what that role is when people want to move here, they contact the town and the town will then take them on a tour or something. We'll take them around town, introduce them to different people in the community, different businesses, possibly show them different areas where they may want to consider, you know, renting or buying a home or something. And so Minakami already had three or four Japanese people doing that role. And they asked me to do the role because of the foreigners that are here and foreigners that inquire about Minakami. So, that's one thing that I'm doing right now. And then separate from that, me and a Canadian friend have actually started talking about an actual community development program outside of kind of the official town office, because the town office tends to be quite bureaucratic. They kind of move slowly. It's, you know, they don't see themselves as having a lot of options. So we're thinking of kind of this real grassroots, like vision building project. Like, what do we want Minakami to be like again for our children's children? So we're kind of thinking of like the 2050 type idea. And this is really just in the initial stages of it, but we want to recruit people from the local community to start having kind of these town halls and discussions about what kind of a Minakami do we want to create. So again, really early stages, but really excited about projects like that and trying to have some kind of an impact that ideally have an impact in Japan as well, you know?
That's great. It's very forward thinking. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. With for yourself, what are some routines or resources that help you as an individual?
So like yourself, I've been a runner for a long time. So that's kind of a go-to. I do.
Do you run in that snow?
Sometimes, yeah. It's a little bit, running on the roads here is a little bit sloppy this time of year because of the snow melt and slush and all that. But I'm a trail runner as well. So getting out onto the trails and actually running in this kind of snow on the trails is really pleasant. My routine is some form of exercise, which is usually running or some other resistance training that I do at my house, or this time of year, it's like skiing. So getting out for that. I have been practicing mindfulness meditation for 20 or 30 years in kind of different ways. And actually since COVID hit, it's probably been the most regular practice that I've had over the past 2.5 years or so. So I start my mornings with that most days. I do a bit of journaling as well. And that serves me in the morning as a way to kind of get my head together, or I often refer to it as throwing up on the page because I wake up in the mornings like with jumbled head or in a shitty mood or something. And just like, it's a way to kind of to get it out and kind of clear myself a bit. So those three, kind of the fitness routine, the meditation, and the journaling practice are the things that when I don't do them, like on vacation periods like this, I've got the week off now and I do it a bit less. And I realize like, it's not something that I feel like I have to do. It's something that it feels like missing a little bit, right? So it's nice to be able to get to a routine where it's that type of relationship with it, where it's like, I have to do this to improve myself, or I have to do this because other people are doing it, or whatever the reasons are. Those are kind of three of my kind of core personal routines, if that's what you meant.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like giving people things that they can try out for their world that helps them succeed as well. Which, yeah. I don't think we want to leave without you have one of your taglines is bear dancing.
yep.
Why is that?
So a year ago, it was August of 2020, I was taking a walk about 10 minutes from here. And yes, I encountered a bear and we had a bit of a dance together. I intentionally don't use language like attacked or mauled, because thanks to that experience, I've learned quite a bit about bears in Japan being in danger of extinction. Because there is very little regulation around how many bears are killed here, and there's no relocation programs. And actually, you know, when bears encounter humans, the thing that they want to do most is to get away from humans. And wow. Generally only will only harm humans if they're surprised. And that was my mistake. I was out for a quiet walk and stepped just off the road a bit and didn't have bear bell or make any noise or anything, and it was a mother hiding in the bush with her cub somewhere else. She just did a very natural thing, and it was in the moment, kind of what I will never forget the most about it is after she took me down, she stepped back into the woods and turned around again and faced me, and just stayed, you know, and allowed me to get away. It's just like this, this understanding of naturally occurring mercy, you know, within nature. Like I've kind of given you my message, and now, you know, please go away. And so it was really kind of a deep experience in that way. Like mercy is a very naturally occurring thing.
That's great. Yeah. It's a good story, and I like the takeaways with that, especially, you know, and I think any stranger walks into your house, you'd slap them around a little bit to get them out, right?
Yeah.
So that's, I like how you message that with mercy and around the semiotic relationship with nature, and I think that's important. And it's important to have a bear bell. It's a big takeaway.
Or clap your hands, or have your phone going in your pocket with some music or something, because the life you save will actually probably be the life of that animal. So yeah. the bear that I met was trapped and killed, and so left a cub without a mother, and that's the way it goes in Japan. And by the way, there's a really cool organization, the way I've learned all this stuff, it's called Kumamori. Kuma means bear and Mori means forest. And so it's an organization that protects the bears. And one of the ways they do that is by making forests healthier so that bears don't need to come where people are. So that you know, that they're kind of the seeds and the nuts that they need in the mountains. So it's a great organization to support if you're interested.
That's great. Well, thank you. We'll share a link in the podcast notes.
Yeah. So you know that you can't go through all this without allowing me to ask a question too, right, David? I'm
gonna
I can't go sit through it. A whole thing without getting to ask a question. And I don't think I've asked you this, but I've been having a bit of fun with it over the past few weeks. And that is, this year, 2021, is the year of the ox, yeah?
Yeah.
And next year is the year of the tiger, according to the Chinese zodiac, right? So how has this year been an ox for you? and how do you want next year to be a tiger?
Wow. Okay. It's interesting. I haven't thought about either of those. I haven't even thought about your being tiger, except I have one son and my wife are both tigers.
Oh, nice.
I would say that a lot of this year for myself was an ox in the way that I had to labor and pull like an ox would through a field. And so it felt like work, not disagreeable work, but it was more a labor. And so I would say that's how it was very much like an ox. I'm hoping that the new year will be tasty like an ox as well, and we'll just barbecue it. Sorry to my vegetarian friends who are listening. And then I would say for a tiger, I think one of the things, and being in recruitment, I think the thing that's going to be important to me is what I can do to have a higher fee line with what we charge our clients.
Oh, and, no, you didn't. That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I was going to drop that, but I decided I wasn't going to. Nice. Anyway, I think we should probably leave that there. And if people want to reach out to you and find out more about you, obviously we'll have all of your links in the meeting notes, but where's the best place to find out more about Corey McGowan?
Yeah. So I have a website. It's adventure-partner.net. I'm also on LinkedIn and I'm on Instagram under Corey Adventure Partner. And I would just love to send out an invitation to anyone that's interested to come and check out Minakami, whether it's coaching related or not. I will also be running my first outdoor coaching team program this year that will have a few visits to Minakami. So if there are leadership teams out there that are looking for a combination of executive coaching and adventure, I'd really love to have you be part of that program.
Great. Thank you. And just as a testimonial, not only am I a guest, but I'm also a user of Corey's practice. So just as I find that it's you're very insightful, well educated, and with a strong depth within in the field. And I always feel very comfortable relating to you, as well as recommending others to you. So I thank you for that, and thank you for your comments today, and glad to have you on board.
Yeah, it's been really fun. Thanks, Darren.
Thank you, sir.